This is Digital Story Podcast number 882, February 14th, 2023. Today's theme is Your Camera's Hidden Features. I'm Derek Story. Every camera I've owned has had one or two tricks up its sleeve that I didn't initially discover. Then one day I'd be reading a review or listening to a podcast and learn about it, which makes me think, what sort of magic resides inside your camera that you haven't uncovered yet? I'll share a few of my favorites in today's TVS Photography Podcast. I hope you enjoy the show. So this is a lot of fun discovering hidden features inside of cameras, and I guess it's top of mind for me right now because we're in the middle of our Mastering Micro Four Thirds camera workshop, and I'm having a lot of fun just digging through menus and exploring features and going, I didn't know my camera could do that. And I was thinking, you know, we're having a lot of fun in the workshop. I'm having a lot of fun. And I thought, well, maybe I should spread the joy a bit with everyone in our community. So that's what today's about. So I have a few different cameras here that I'm going to use to illustrate these points. And what I'm hoping they will do, even if it's not your specific camera, it will cause you to go, does my camera have that? And then start digging around inside your owner's manual or your menu system or wherever. But I do have a nice variety today. We're going to have tips for the Sony A7 IV, the Ricoh GR3, the Fujifilm X100V, the OM System OM1, and the iPhone Pro. So that's not too bad. And I'll tell you one thing right now. When I'm looking at, you know, features that are kind of neat and a little bit hidden in one camera, and then a camera I shoot with doesn't have it, I go, oh, why can't we have all of these features in all of the cameras? But again, that's what gives us the excuse to buy multiple cameras, right? Or one of the things. All right, anyway, let's start with the Sony A7 IV. So the first one that I want to tell you about is HEIF, the format, HEIF instead of JPEG. So I love this about the Sony. If you don't know about HEIF, if you have an iPhone, you're shooting with it already or can shoot with it already. It's a high efficiency image format. And what's so cool about it, it's been around for a few years now, and it stores twice as much information as a JPEG in the same file size, right? So it's the same. So each, let's say it's, 4 megabytes. The HEIF is going to have twice as much image information in that 4 megabytes than a JPEG. It's really cool. And if you're not shooting with it on your iPhone right now, I know we're talking about the Sony, but the iPhone's kind of what really made it mainstream, then you need to go to your settings and switch to it because the images truly are better. And it's widely accepted now. There's no compatibility problems. You can open it with practically anything. And the Sony, in all of their wisdom, they give you that option. So you can either choose JPEG or HEIF. And believe me, I would choose HEIF. And this is for your compressed format. So you could also shoot RAW plus JPEG or RAW plus HEIF with the Sony A7 IV. Now, the way that you get to it in the Sony is you go to Menu, the Shooting menu, image quality settings, and file format, right? So in this menu, you can also select RAW plus HEIF or RAW plus JPEG. RAW plus HEIF, man, that is a true power couple, isn't it? That is some pretty sweet stuff. And as I mentioned a few moments ago, every application now, or practically every application, supports this format. There's no real reason not to shoot in it if you have it available to you, and you do have it available to you in the Sony A7. So that's one of the hidden features, Sony shooters, that you might not know about, and boy, oh boy, you have a gem waiting for you there. All right, let's go over to the Ricoh, the GR3. This is a compact point-and-shoot camera, at least it looks like it, but it packs a powerful APS-C size sensor, and it has got tons of cool settings in it. It's a very sophisticated camera. It's a lovely camera. I've had some major desire for one for, well, I got to test one to write a review, and then I had to send it back, and ever since I've wanted one. And they have a new one now that it's a special edition, and I think it's called the Diary Edition, that has kind of this warm titanium finish and a special little wristband and a special case and even a metal hot shoe cover that you can have your own engraving on. Oh, man. As if I didn't want that camera bad enough already, they had to go and do that. But it's also that particular special edition, limited quality, of course, I think is also probably about $1,200 when you're done with tax. So, okay, there's the barrier, right? But anyway, there are all sorts of different versions of this camera. They have an urban edition and they have the stock edition, which is far more affordable than the special editions, and they're all great cameras. However, there are some cool little features in one, and the one I'm going to tell you about today for the Ricoh GR3 is the automatic horizon correction. So I think this is a really neat feature for this camera because it doesn't have an electronic viewfinder. You have to compose on the LCD screen. And I don't know if this happens to you, but for me and for other people that I know, when you're trying to get that horizon straight on an LCD screen, it can be problematic at times. You think you've got it, and then you're off just a little bit. Well, apparently the folks at Ricoh acknowledge this challenge, and they give you automatic horizon correction. So when you're composing on an LCD screen, you know, with this camera, the only viewfinder that it has, unless you get the optional optical viewfinder, you can enable the setting, right? And it will straighten the horizon for you when you take the shot. Now, it's not huge. When you have IBIS on, when you have image stabilization on, it will correct it up to a degree and a half. And when you don't have IBIS on, it'll still correct it up to a degree. Now, I know that doesn't sound like a ton, but that's usually what gets us when we're you know, being focused on getting that horizon straight, and we miss, we're usually just off by a degree or so anyway. And this would fix that for us. Now, the way that you get to it, it's in the shooting assist menu. I think it's menu 7, and it's at the bottom of the screen. So again, when you turn it on, you have it on, and I would just leave it on, especially if you're going to be doing stuff with horizons, right? You get that 1.5 degrees if IBIS is on, and I'm guessing you're going to have image stabilization on anyway. Why wouldn't you? So you're going to get that 1.5 degrees of automatic horizon correction. I just think that is a super cool feature. And I have a bonus feature that some folks may not know about, but the GR3 has built-in memory. It's not huge. It's up to 40 RAW files and 140 JPEGs. And where this is really cool is that if you have a problem with your SD card, let's say it goes bad on you and you're out in the field and you're in the middle of the shoot and you want to take more pictures, or somehow you do the wonderful trick of taking the SD card out to put it in a card reader, you do all your work, you get very excited about your pictures, and then you forget to put the card back in the camera. I know none of us have ever done that, but it is a possibility, right? It is a possibility. Anyway, if you run into any of these sad scenarios, even just filling up your card and still wanting to take a few more pictures, you have internal memory on the GR3. And I believe to get to it, you go to the format menu and you can switch between the memory card or internal memory as to where you want the camera to record the images. And again, you get 40 RAW files or 140 JPEGs. Doesn't sound like a ton, but I'll tell you, if you're just that close to the finish line and have a problem, you're going to love that safety net. So that's another feature that I think a lot of folks might not realize that's in their Ricoh GR3. It's a cool little camera. Absolutely cool little camera. All right, let's get on to the Fujifilm X100V. This is the one that I went for, you know, when I was debating between the GR3 and the Fujifilm. And, you know, each of them have pros and cons. I would love to have them both. But I went with the Fujifilm for a couple reasons. And one was having the optical / electronic viewfinder. Anyway, I've got a couple little goodies for those of you that shoot with the X100V. The film simulation bracket. Film simulation bracket. Now, this is neat. So one of the reasons a lot of us who shoot Fujifilm like Fujifilm is because of their color science. You know, they've been working on this science for years and years and years, going back to the film days with Provia and Velvia, and they have brought all that science and more to their digital cameras. You can shoot in a film simulation mode with your camera, and so you could shoot in Acros black and white, or you can shoot in Velvia color, which is like Velvia slide film, and so on and so forth. However, what if you don't know exactly what's the best interpretation for the scene that you're shooting? Well, they allow you to do film simulation bracketing, where you can choose three different simulations, three different film types, and then when you take the picture, when you press the shutter button, it'll just go bang, 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 and it will record an image in each of those film simulations. You don't have to have it in, you know, burst mode or anything like that. You just, boom, it just does it for you. Now, if you're shooting RAW plus JPEG, you'll get three RAW files and you'll get three JPEGs, all with the film simulation applied. And what's interesting about this, you literally have six different images, because on Fujifilm cameras, at least on my X100V, the RAW files and the JPEGs look different, even with the film simulation. There's a difference in them. So if you're doing this, you're going to actually get six different versions of the same shot, two versions of each film simulation that actually, to my eye, looks, you know, fairly different. This is pretty fun stuff. So how do you set this up on your camera? Well, first of all, you have to decide which film simulations you wanted to record. And you do that in the menu, and you go to Shooting Setting 1 in the menu, and there's a film simulation bracket setting there, and there's where you get to choose the different films. Now, once you back out of the menu, once you've selected your films that you want, then you go to the Drive button on the back of the cameras up by the viewfinder, and then you pick film simulation bracket. It's about halfway down. And they have other brackets too, you know, auto exposure bracket and so forth. But this film simulation bracket, I think, is just like super interesting. And then you just start taking pictures. You just start taking pictures. And it's fun. You can have it. Probably you're wondering, which ones do I do? Well, I like the Astia Soft Color. That's the one that has less contrast. And then I do Velvia for my second one, and that's the boldest color, the boldest contrast, all that. And then for the third one, I do monochrome plus yellow. So I get one black and white shot in that combination. Fun stuff, good stuff. So that is film simulation bracket. Now I got an additional Fujifilm X100V tip. If you have that WCL 28mm lens, right? Because the natural lens on there is 35 millimeter field of view. And, you know, for those of us that sometimes need the wider view, they have this fantastic auxiliary lens, the WCL, and it's a 28 millimeter, but it's also super clever. So when you mount that lens on the front of the camera and you just basically screw it in, then the camera knows that you have the wide angle lens on there. And so it automatically adjusts the field of view in the LCD viewfinder and in the electronic viewfinder. You don't have to tell it, or you don't have to do anything. It just knows and makes the adjustment. So the minute you put that lens on, it's like a DSLR. is that you're seeing the world in 28 millimeters. Now, if you want to see what the 35 millimeter view looks like, even with the 28 millimeter lens on there, then all you have to do is go to the optical viewfinder. That'll give you the 35 millimeter view, and then you go back to electronic viewfinder and you get the 28 millimeter view. It's pretty fun. I love that little lens. It's a great lens. It's just sharp as the day is long, and it's so easy to use because of how smart it is. So there's a couple fun little tips for Fujifilm X100V shooters. Let's go to the OM system OM1. They came out with something on this camera that is so cool. It's called One Touch White Balance. Now, this is for custom white balance. Now, we all know, or not most of us know, right, that when we're in certain situations, indoor lighting with different types of bulbs, or mixed lighting with, you know, outside light and indoor light and all that stuff, we know that for the best color, we should probably do custom white balance. But it seems like a hassle, right? And believe me, in a lot of my workshops, a lot of people just don't know how to set custom white balance on their camera. So they end up either just doing auto white balance, which works okay in some situations, but not all the time for sure, or having to go with one of the presets that comes close, but falls short many times as well. So custom white balance is ideal, but most people feel it's just too much of a hassle. So what OM System did is they put a button on the very front. So it's on the front of the camera. You've got two buttons as you look at the front of the camera. The top one has a little dimple in it. All right, that's the One Touch White Balance button. And all you have to do is just find a sheet of white paper or a white wall or something like that, you know, where the light in the room is reflecting off it. That's going to be your sample. So then you just take your middle finger as you're holding the camera and you press in on that little dimpled button in front, the One Touch button. And then you take your index finger while you're pointing the camera at the white wall or whatever you're shooting, and you take a picture while still holding in that One Touch white balance button. It'll go, okay, it has the custom white balance all set for you, and it'll just ask you to press the okay button to approve it, so to speak. It takes like 2 seconds. It's so easy. Hold the one button in with your middle finger, take a picture with your index finger, and then press the okay, and you're done. And you have custom white balance. Now, the difference between custom white balance and auto white balance in a lot of these situations is huge. It just makes all the difference in the world. And yes, of course, you could correct white balance in post, but why not just look at the world as it's supposed to be, or make the world pretty while you're taking pictures? It's so much more fun and inspiring to do it that way. And then it just save your post-production for making the picture, you know, more creative, or, you know, doing neat things, not fixing your poor shooting technique. All right. So anyway, so for those of you that have the OM1, that is a cool little feature. Now, I'm going to give you a bonus tip for the OM1 too, and it's called handheld assist. And you go, what is that? With handheld assist on, the status of camera shake is actually displayed on the monitor when the shutter button is pressed halfway. So this is really useful when you're trying to figure out how much camera shake is being corrected for these longish exposures. So like there's a gray frame, and it indicates the range that the camera shake can be corrected, right? So this is really neat. And so you can get a visual of how well the shake reduction is fixing your picture in real time, right? So to set this up, you know, you go to the menu and you go to where the image stabilizer settings are, and you'll see in that screen handheld assist, and you just turn it on. That's all there is to it. And then you get this visual representation of how the image stabilization is going to play out when you take this longish exposure shot. Really clever, really cool stuff. All right. I got one more for you. This is the iPhone Pro, and they've got a couple things built in that I think are really neat. One is if you go to the settings menu and you go to camera, one of the things you should look at is to make sure that your lens correction is turned on. It's a toggle switch. And if it isn't, turn it on, because what that'll do is that will reduce the distortion with your wide-angle lens in your ultra-wide-angle lens. It does it in camera while you're taking the shot and will, you know, give you just much more natural-looking photos. Now, if you want the distortion, then you can turn it off for like effects and distortion. But if you, for your everyday shooting, especially with the ultra-wide, if you have that lens correction toggle switch turned on, it makes a big difference. In your ultra-wide shots will just look so much more natural, just like you've got a bunch of information, but not like you're using some kind of fisheye lens, right? So that's pretty neat. And then another thing is that there's a whole little hidden settings menu in the camera app itself while you're taking pictures. And this little settings menu, it's not showing by default. And so sometimes people don't know it's there. But it has things like settings for night mode, the proportions, you know, do you want to capture 4x3, 16x9, things like that. Exposure compensation, self-timer, there's all sorts of good stuff in there. Now, the way that you reveal it, as you're looking at the camera interface, you know, like you're going to take a picture, up at the top of the screen, there's a little chevron pointing up. It's very indiscreet, which is why I think a lot of people miss it. Just tap on that to make it point down. Then at the bottom of the screen, it will reveal this little bar of settings that you can use while you're taking pictures. It's super helpful. The iPhone already does a great job because of all the computational photography built into it. But sometimes you want to customize it a bit to your own particular taste. You can do that with this additional settings menu that you can reveal by tapping that little chevron at the top of the screen. All right, so that gives you some idea of some of the hidden features that you may have available to you, but you haven't found them yet in your camera settings. So what I suggest, regardless of what type of camera you have, get in there, dig around, and look for some of these types of things, and then play with them. It just makes you fall in love all over again with your favorite camera. OM Digital Solutions releases the OM System Digital ED 90mm f3.5 Macro IS Pro. They released it last week. It's a beautiful professional lens. I actually wrote about it on our Substack newsletter. So if you get that newsletter, you probably have already seen my point of view on this lens, but I wanted to at least notify everyone about its existence. So let me read you a few paragraphs from this article. There's a link to the entire article in the show notes. The 90mm f3.5 Macro IS Pro is an autofocus lens that delivers up to 2x macro or 4x with a 2x teleconverter. Its stabilization system is compatible with the Sync IS system, allowing it to work in conjunction with in-body stabilization of Olympus and OM system cameras. By the way, that's up to 7 stops. The lens is constructed from 18 elements arranged in 13 groups. Its design has 2 focus groups that act in conjunction, allowing very close focus when the focus limit switch is in macro position. This lens also has a focus ring that can be snapped back to reveal the focus distance scale. In addition to the slide switch between manual focus and autofocus, there's also a dedicated IS toggle and then a lens function button as well. So you can assign camera functions to that button. For very close-up work, the lens has a groove behind all these controls, which should be compatible with a tripod collar from the 40 to 150 f2.8 Pro, which is kind of neat. You can repurpose that tripod collar on this lens, though OM Digital Systems isn't promoting it as such. So, kind of a hidden feature, right? OMDS says it has no plans to sell the collar separately, but it may be possible to source it from service centers. Or if you just have that 40 to 150, you can just move the collar back and forth. It's pretty easy. So the lens, the 90mm f3.5, will be available in March 2023 with a recommended price of $1,499 in the U.S. and $2,049 in Canada. And it is very nice. So what I wrote about in the Substack newsletter was that, well, you know, Olympus already has two macro lenses, right? They have the 30mm and the 60mm. And the 60mm is really nice, right? Why did they need this third one, this 90mm, of all the things that they could do? And the thing about it is that as good as those other two macros are, they're not that professional caliber lens, right, that this 90mm is. You know, there's not as much image stabilization. For instance, with this 90mm, you can actually do handheld macro work. They don't get as close. They don't have all the features. They don't have Sync IS, you know, the lens quality, all that stuff. So they really needed to fill out that line because Micro Four Thirds is a fantastic format for macro work because you get that little extra depth of field, which makes a big difference when you're shooting close-up objects. So it was, when you think about it, really a natural thing to do. It's pricey, but it's a professional lens. And I'm really glad they came out with it. I'm not a macro photographer myself, so I'm probably going to stick with the 60mm. I really like it a lot. But boy, if I was getting more serious about macro photography, I'd be all over this lens. I just want to touch on this headline because, you know, we've had this ongoing conversation about AI. Controversial AI program generates photorealistic police sketches. And you can read this entire article on petapixel.com. I have the link in the show notes. I'm just going to read you a little bit about this. Two developers have created an artificial intelligence software that generates photorealistic police sketches using DALL-E, which is one of the AI software packages. Forensic sketch artist was made to cut down the time it takes to create police sketch of a suspect. It was created at a hackathon event in December 2022 and works by inputting facial features. Quote, first the artist collects a description from the witness by using our client, explains the software developers. Then the client sends the description to our server where the request is parsed and sent to the API. After a few seconds, we have a sketch ready to be sent to the client and in turn to the artist. After that, the artist can opt to end the drawing process or to download the generated sketch and perform some small corrections to it. So, of course, this is not going to go without some pushback, right? In an interview with Vice, Jennifer Lynch, the surveillance litigation director of the Electronic Frontier Foundation, says the use of AI in police work is incredibly dangerous. The problem with traditional sketches is that they take time to produce, which seems to be the only problem that this software is trying to solve. The problem is that any forensic sketch is already subject to human bias and frailty of human memory, says Lynch. AI can't fix those human problems, and this particular program will likely make them worse through its very design. So this isn't out yet. They're still working on it. It's another wrinkle in the way that AI is affecting our world, and I thought it was interesting. And again, if you want to read more about it and get into more detail, I have the link in the show notes. All right, let's take care of a little Virtual Camera Club news. Let's start out with that Nimble Photographer newsletter, which comes out every Thursday. It's free as in beer. And what I'm allowed to do with that is cover the stuff that happens after I do the podcast. This lens was a perfect example. It did not come out till Wednesday. I had to record the podcast on Monday, but I got to cover it on Thursday in the newsletter. You can subscribe to the newsletter by going to the Nimble Photographer website. There's a link there. Or if you're a Substacker already, then just search on Derek's Story, derekstory.substack.com. And every Thursday, just like the podcast comes out every Tuesday, that newsletter will be waiting for you. Just a quick note on our workshops. Those seats for the Point Reyes workshop, they got snapped up fairly quickly, so that workshop is now full. And the Sedona workshop is full also, but we still have a couple seats for the Wine Country workshop, which is going to be a lot of fun. So if you're jonesing for a physical workshop to hang out with others, to do all the cool stuff, there's going to be autumn color in this workshop. There's going to be learning about wine and wine tasting. It's going to be a blast. That one still has a few seats open, and you can get to it by visiting the Nimble Photographer website and click on workshops, or click on workshops at the Digital Story. I want to give a big shout out to our Inner Circle members. They are the ones that support this community, this podcast, month in and month out, with their pledges and with their great ideas and just with their moral support. I mean, they're just a terrific group. That community on Derek's Story Online, I think we've reached some sort of threshold, because it's got such a nice vibe right now. It has a wonderful activity, lots of conversations going on, picture sharing, all that good stuff. If you want to become a member of the Inner Circle, which I hope you do in 2023, just click on the Patreon tile that's on all the pages of the Digital Story. That will explain everything to you, take you over to a Patreon site where you can sign up. And once you do that, you'll have access to the Inner Circle both on the Patreon site and on Derek's Story Online. And a huge shout out to those that are supporting us right now. Thank you so very much. And finally, I want to thank our friends at Red River Paper, longest running sponsor of the Digital Story. I was having a conversation the other day with someone that was interested in becoming a sponsor for the site. And I was just thinking in my mind, boy, the bar is pretty high, because it's not just, you know, contributing a few dollars every month. It's also becoming a part of the community. And that's exactly what Red River Paper has done. They are part of this community, and they support our endeavors in so many ways. And they sell the most fantastic inkjet printing paper that you can get your hands on. And they have tons of information on their site. Just a lovely, lovely group of people who are just so excited about making beautiful artwork. If you're interested in getting your inkjet printing mojo on, then I suggest you click on that Red River tile that's on all the pages of the Digital Story. It'll take you to our landing page. You can nose around a bit and then just head off into their site and just see all the neat things that you can do with your inkjet printer. And they also have a community on Facebook. It's facebook.com/redriverpaper. A big thanks to them for supporting this podcast. We're so happy to have them here. All right, it's going to do it for me this week. I hope you enjoyed the show. I hope you enjoyed the tips. Pull out your camera. Play with the menu. Find something cool, and then go take pictures using it. I'm working on some neat stuff for next week. Until then, have a great week. See you next Tuesday. Bye-bye now.